With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thank you to Jenny Green and her team. Hello and welcome to Tuesday's Game On.
We look ahead to the Republic of Ireland's friendly against Qatar tonight, which takes on a lot more significance. We'll be speaking to Vinnie Perth.
Well, I knew when I took the job that that's where we're at. Okay, if you lose to Luxembourg, you have to accept the criticism.
Mark Langdon joins us for our regular European football chat.
And Gary Murphy will talk golf as John Murphy and Mark Power are included in the 10-man Great Britain and Ireland Walker Cup team.
Just sheer genius. You won't see a better shot than that all week.
It's just an honour to be selected for your country. It's a week that you obviously want to win, you want to play well, but I think it's a week you have to enjoy.
Ruby has rounded up Harry Skelton as he chases Brian Hughes down in his bid to be champion jockey.
Into the closing stages, Paletta Logan, Harry Skelton in front, tiring a little bit in the closing stages, but he's run them ragged this afternoon. He's jumped superbly, a fifth festival run, a first festival victory.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So guys, I think we're all watching and waiting to see what is going to happen with this government announcement. And I guess in particular for our listeners, we're wondering what's going to happen with sport. It's been widely reported that inter-county GAA training will return on April 19th. And then that will mean that there will be a revised, regionalised and compacted Alliance League that will be completed over 5 weekends. And then underage sports training and distance sports, tennis and golf, will return on April 26th. That's a bit of time away yet, but look, at least there is a little bit of a plan and there are some things coming back.
Bit of light at the end of the tunnel, really, isn't it, for everyone? Just then, small little things, Marie, chatting about her kids going back to sport. It is exciting and it is a bit of hope. Are you having it, Ruby?
I am, but like even today with the sun shining and the warm weather and telling the kids, like, no, it's not the 5th of April, it's not really going to happen then, but they're pushing everything back a week and then a couple of weeks later, you can go back training. And they're looking at me like I have 14 heads as you're trying to break it to them gently that, by the way, it's another month away, because that is the reality of it. It's another month
that is,
away.
That is it, exactly, a whole other month. And I've seen a lot of people joking about the GAA being back before the golf, but I guess the thing about it is that it's 2% of the GAA players are going back, whereas when golf does go back...
Oh, they're doing it that way this time, are they?
They're doing it the other way around this time, yeah.
Oh, right. Brought you at 98% last time. That was right. So I'm going to go up to 2% this time. Oh, that makes sense, doesn't it?
And then 100% of golf and tennis players will be back when they do go back. So there's plenty to argue about there.
We didn't admit Ruby was right. You were right, Ruby. You were
four players on a tee box, like, yeah.
I think
was that a fifth of a football squad?
We established that at the start when he got on board, and we just work around that.
I'm kind of into maths. 2% makes a lot more sense than 98%, to be honest with you. But anyhow,
well, they're doing Marie, it right this Marie time, is not anyway, like, in your
just,
mind.
Donnicky, you have to realise, man, whatever you do, do not say anything bad about the GAA. It just puts her in bad form. It's only 3 minutes past six, like, we're on till 7 o'clock.
Well, I'm delighted it's coming back anyway. I'm looking forward to the league. I'm looking forward to the championship. We'll be talking about it for months on end and you'll have to listen to it. Anyway, let's move on because we are joined by Vinnie Perth now, and there is a must-win Republic of Ireland football match taking place a little bit later on. The Republic of Ireland and Qatar are playing in a friendly, but it feels more than just a friendly, Vinnie.
Yeah, and it's all the GAA's fault.
No. I agree with you. Go on, Vinny, expand on that.
I wish I could. I wouldn't be safe to tell the real truth. No, look, I mean, it's a huge game for Ireland tonight. It is a friendly. When it was set out a couple of months ago, it was nearly a headache in the sense of, you know, we didn't really need another friendly like that. It was added in by FIFA to help Qatar, and it's now a game that, to be honest, in one sense, I don't think the management need. They would probably prefer to finish up and take a break and reset themselves. But I think they're on a no-win tonight. If they win 2-0, I think people will say they should have beat them. And if they lose 2-0, the noise will be extremely loud. So it's a very difficult night ahead for the whole of the Irish setup.
It really is. And there is one game in our group already underway this evening. Serbia are leading Azerbaijan 1-0, and then a little bit later, Luxembourg will take on Portugal from our group as well. So, Vinny, I think the big question is, and we're probably a little bit away from knowing the answer to it, but you'd have a good take on whether or not Stephen Kenny can turn things around.
I suppose for me personally, I think he can. I think before the Luxembourg game, I think we went into it and I think we all seen a real sense of progress over, albeit he hadn't won. And I think he hadn't won games for the obvious reasons of COVID and injuries, etc. But I think in Serbia, we've seen a real positive vibe around the team. We've seen progress and we've seen that, we can go away and keep possession and play a different style. And it looked good, but it was completely all undone with the performance against Luxembourg, and it set everybody back, four or five steps, and I think it's asked real questions of the management setup. And I like to think Stephen, I've seen him in difficult situations before, being with him in difficult situations, and I'd like to think he can pull the rabbit out of that and get this squad back on track. And I've heard some of his interviews, I think he's been bullish, and there's been a lot of commentary around it, and that's because it is the biggest job in Irish sport. I think we've seen that with the media and the noise around it, but he's got one hell of a job to do over the next couple of months.
So Vinny, when he sits down, I'm sure he has it done by now, to plan whatever system he's going to play tonight and put 11 players on the pitch, if he's been bullish, what does he do?
Well, I think this is the problem of the result the other night, is that, to be honest with you, in his own head he would have planned this to be give a couple of lads in the squad a chance, an opportunity, the Daryl Horgans, maybe those type of lads who are just on the periphery, and give them some game time and see what they have to offer. But he has to be stuck in his head over the last couple of days. I think he needs a win. And then in the middle of that, then you've got the scenario where he's left someone like Jeff Hendrick out and Robbie Brady. And does he turn to them now? What's their mental state in terms of how do they feel around the group? Do they feel let down? So I think this is a massive test of his man management, more than tactical and football and all of that stuff. And how can he get 11 players on the pitch that really are ready to roll up their sleeves and get a result for him? And I think that's made it really difficult for him.
But Vinny, if you look back at the Serbia goal, the second Irish goal was out of pure pressure on the Serbians. It wasn't a brilliant footballing goal, even from someone who knows very little about it, like my eyes. So 3-2 kind of papered over the cracks. Then you had the Luxembourg game. Why doesn't he just roll the dice with new players tonight? Because the ones he's been putting out haven't been performing.
Yeah, but I think, to be fair, he's done that in the sense of, like, we started with midfield two of Josh Cullen and Jason Knight. I mean, the two of them are really young players, more or less making their debuts or a couple of games in. The one thing he's done, he hasn't been afraid to make change and try to sort of involve the squad. I mean, he's brought into the squad Travers, O'Shea, Malumbi, Cullen, Knight, Parrott, Ida. They've all made the debut from, they're all 2021. I mean, there's a long-term project there. Now, whether that's enough to keep him in a job, we won't know, but that's the challenge he has, Ruby. If he goes back to a Jeff Hendrick, who's been left out of, a very senior player, premiership footballer, its option is to go back to someone like Jeff Hendrick. And how does he get a response from Jeff, and how is Jeff feeling mentally? And that's why I say the man management now is such a crucial part of his job over the next, over the last 2 days and heading into this game. So I think he needs a win. So I don't think he'd be flippant about the game. And as I said, he may have tried something different in his own head a couple of months ago, but now I don't think he can. I think he needs a win.
So when you look at the amount of analysis and the focus and the pressure that is ultimately coming on top of him, how do you think he's coping with this?
I suppose, look, he's never experienced that before, and that would be the stick that people would have beaten with, because at Dundalk, we didn't have the same media scrutiny. Just doesn't happen for obvious reasons. So it is new, and I think he's been himself in press conference by and large, and to some people outside, that's you know, that's something they haven't experienced before. But people in the game wouldn't see that much difference in his press conferences and how he speaks in camera. I think that's him, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I think he's just been natural enough. But look, he's a big boy. He gets paid big money. He's at the top of the tree in Irish football. He's also not stupid. He knows it's the results business, and he knows that he's got to get wins. So he'll feel a massive amount of pressure. Of that, I've no doubt. I know the FAI came out and they backed him this week, but he will feel pressure to get results. You hear the noise as much as you try. I'm sure the two lads will tell you, whatever sport it is, you can hear the noise, you can hide away from as much as you want, but you hear it, and your friends, your family hear it, and they let you know that it's happening. So difficult situation, but for me, I think he needs to be himself as much as possible and play his own way, and I hope he does that starting tonight.
You're dead right, Vinny. You don't have to read the papers to know people are giving out about you. That's just, you can sense that, you know, or listen to the news, you know, when you're not popular. But surely he can ignite a response. The players must be aware of the criticism they're getting as well. And surely as a group, they're going to come out fighting tonight.
Yes, you would say so. I mean, but nobody foresaw what happened against Luxembourg. Just didn't see it. We thought the Irish team had turned a corner. He had won a bit of a battle in terms of the old pros. The old pros comment a lot on sport. That's the nature of the business. So a lot of the old pros had been very favourable about the performance in Serbia, and then all of a sudden he just hit a brick wall against Luxembourg. So my thinking is that he set with a lot of players, had one-on-one discussions, known them, gone into their heads, tried to get the very best out of them. But you know, sometimes when the wheels come off, they come off, and it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, Joe Smith or Alex Ferguson. You just can't fix it, and sometimes that happens. And we've seen with some top managers for many, many years haven't been able to halt the slide. I hope it's not the case. So it's just no secret to it. You need a little bit of luck. And even the other night against Luxembourg, I think if Collins scores that first goal, I think it's a completely different game. But he doesn't, and he loses. So that's the harsh reality of top level sport.
It really is. Well, I think I agree with you anyway, Vinny. Hopefully we will get a good performance and a win tonight, because I think it would do everyone a lot of good. Vinny Perth, thanks so much for joining us. Just a few updates. The government are starting to confirm what will happen over the next few months, and the 26th of April, golf and outdoor tennis, that is confirmed, and outdoor sports returning for under-18s as well on April 26th. And it's also confirmed that the senior inter-county players can return to collect of training from April 19th, and Damien Lawler has said that there is an appetite as well for the leagues to go ahead. So we will see what happens there. And as I said a little bit earlier, there is one game in our World Cup qualifying group underway, Azerbaijan and Serbia, and it is still 1-0 to Serbia. Now, I'm delighted to say that Mark Langdon of the Racing Post joins us for our regular European football chat. Mark, I can't think of anywhere else to start, really, bar Aguero and where he's going to go to next.
Yeah, obviously the news this week, I don't think it was a massive surprise given the way that Aguero has been sort of marginalised this season. He's had his injury problems, but even when he's been fit, Guardiola has turned to other players. And so it didn't surprise me this week that it was announced that Aguero would be leaving. There will be no shortage of takers. He'll be expensive, by free transfer standards, given the wage he's likely to demand from any potential suitors, but the list will be long. Atletico Madrid have been linked to return to the club where he sort of made his name in European football. I don't see that. I mean, they've kind of got the best out of Luis Suarez, but I don't think you can have two kind of veterans in that position. Barcelona, I think, is the most interesting destination at this point, and not least because he is very close to Lionel Messi, and Messi has lost a number of friends in Neymar and Luis Suarez in the last few years. Could Aguero be the kind of man that helps to keep Messi at Barcelona? I'd definitely say that would be one to look out for. In Italy, he's been spoken about as potentially moving to Inter. Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku both have got sort of potential suitors elsewhere themselves. So if they were to lose one of their front two, maybe Inter would be a potential destination. But I would make Barcelona at the moment most likely to sign Aguero in the summer.
Mark, I thought they were financially under unbelievable pressure. Is Messi going to pay Aguero's wages as well, or are they just going to print more money in Barcelona?
Yeah, I mean, they are under the pump financially, no doubt about that. But a new president's coming in, Laporta. He is trying to bring with him some new finances, and whether they can restructure some deals along the way and some loans, I suspect they'll have to, because Barcelona will need to make some kind of signings, because that's just the way it is. They can't just sort of run the team into the ground. So there may well be some departures, but Messi would be sort of last on the list of those that they'd like to leave. He's having had a slow start to the season. He's now absolutely flying and sort of back to something like his best. And Aguero wouldn't be the cheapest free transfer, as I said, but it would still be a free transfer, and they could probably do a clever deal where, as they've done with a number of their players, where actually they're not, that they've kind of renegotiated a lot of contracts where it goes up year by year, and it's sort of further down the line. They're just kicking the debt further down the line, so that they could maybe do something like that. They probably do need another forward, having lost Luis Suarez. They might be a centre forward light, actually, because somebody like Braithwaite, who plays for Denmark, he's done an okay job, but he wouldn't be of the sort of required Barcelona standard. And a lot of their other forward players prefer to play in the wider areas, so that's why I'm sort of thinking maybe Aguero could be a sensible option for Barcelona.
I'd say they'd sell a lot of Barcelona jerseys with Aguero on the back as well. Now, Mark, of things that I'm sick of talking about, COVID is one of them, but another one that comes very close is Liverpool's centre-back dilemma, and it looks like they're looking to RB Leipzig now for a new one.
Yeah, Ibrahim Konate, who I think is a really good player, and this would be a very interesting signing if Liverpool could get him over the line. A lot of talk about Upamecano, the other centre-back at Leipzig, and you know he's signed for Bayern Munich for next season, but I don't think Konate is too far behind him, really. Maybe not quite as good on the ball as Upamecano, but definitely sort of good enough, and if you play for Leipzig, you know the way they like to play is pretty similar to Liverpool, so you could definitely understand why it would be of interest, because you know when you buy a centre back for somebody like Liverpool and they're asked to play sort of 15 yards further up the pitch than what they maybe would at other clubs, it can be a very daunting task. The pitch looks very different if you're having to defend on the halfway line, but Leipzig do that, so you know being able to sign somebody from Leipzig makes a lot of sense. You know, you're signing somebody from, say, I don't know, like a Tarkowski from Burnley, you know, that they play completely differently. So in terms of sort of highly rated young centre-backs, he would be right up there. It would also fit, I think, the way that Liverpool are trying to do their transfers and the kind of players that they're looking to bring in, and maybe helps to explain why they didn't want to waste, and I'll put that in inverted commas, waste, because they could end up costing them a lot if they don't make the Champions League, but it maybe explains why they didn't want to waste money in January buying somebody that wasn't their first choice target.
You mentioned Bayern Munich there a minute ago, and Robert Lewandowski is going to miss both legs of Bayern's quarterfinal, Europe Champions League quarterfinal matches against PSG. Can they get by PSG without him?
They can, but the task has been made a whole lot more difficult. I mean, Bayern Munich will be absolutely furious that Lewandowski's injured himself playing against Andorra, a game that, you know, in this international period, where you've got three matches in quick succession. Did he really need to play in that middle game against Andorra? Probably not. Did score a couple of goals, then got injured. And Bayern Munich just haven't got another centre-forward. They're in that position, I suppose, a bit like Tottenham with Harry Kane, where there's such a dominant player in that position. Nobody really wants to come and sort of be the reserve forward, because you know you're not going to play that often. So they have got a sort of like for like in some regards in Choupo-Moting, who used to play for Paris Saint-Germain, but he would be way down the list in terms of, you know, how close he is to being as good as Lewandowski. They're going to have to play somebody out of position, I would have thought. That could be Thomas Muller moving up from an attacking midfield position. It could be Leroy Sané or Serge Gnabry moving off the wing into the centre-forward position. But, you know, none of them are as good as Lewandowski, and you're then taking away something from elsewhere on the pitch. So this is a really big blow. I don't expect it to harm Bayern Munich in terms of the Bundesliga, but they were given one of the worst draws in the Champions League quarterfinals in that repeat of last season's final, and now they're missing the most important player in their team. So Paris Saint-Germain will be probably feeling more confident than they were 24 hours ago, that's for sure.
Okay, we are awaiting team news for the Republic of Ireland, but in our group, Azerbaijan, Mark, have equalised against Serbia. Dissect that one for me, please.
Good news.
Miracles happen.
some rare good news for Irish football fans after you know what's been a really bad week. Azerbaijan, I think, have shown over the last couple of qualifying campaigns that they're not complete mugs and not sort of what you'd put in a sort of Andorra or San Marino bracket, but by any stretch of the imagination, sort of similar, I suppose, to a bit like Georgia, who Ireland have had problems with in past qualifying campaigns as well. So I did expect Serbia to win that game, and maybe they still will, but so it is a surprise. Serbia themselves are a very inconsistent team. Spoke about it last week, where you're never quite sure what you're going to get from them, and after making a really good start, this would be a big blow for them and a real positive for Ireland. So hopefully, for Stephen Kenny, maybe some good news after what's been such a bad week.
Well, Stephen Kenny has made some wholesale changes to his starting 11 for this game against Qatar. Gavin Bazunu retains his position, so does Seamus Coleman. Shane Duffy is in. Daryl Horgan is there, as predicted by Vinnie Perth a little bit earlier on. Robbie Brady, James McLean, Jeff Hendrick again, as Vinnie Perth said he might bring him back in, Jason Malumbi, Shane Long, Dara O'Shea and Cyrus Christie. So a really interesting starting 11 there. So many changes, so many names that people were calling for after the last game as well, Mark.
Yeah, you go through that team, I mean, the one.
Oh, we seem to have lost Mark. We'll try and get him back again shortly. But a very interesting team there from Stephen Kenny. Some brave calls and a lot of eyeballs are going to be on that now to see how he sets up, and also just to see what philosophy he's going to come out with. Is he going to revert to type, or is he going to stick to what he believes in?
But is picking that team with not older names, but names that have been in the last campaign with Mick McCarthy, is that going back against what Stephen Kenny believed in, or is it sticking to what he believes in?
But sometimes, Ruby, it's no harm if you can kind of say, you know, I've learned, or, you know what I mean, I've come away from that and I know I need a result and I know these guys will get me there, and maybe just reflect on it and think, you know, right now I need to win. And that's what Vinny was mentioning, the man management side of it. He needs a win this weekend, or tonight, sorry.
He really does need a win, Mark, doesn't he?
He sure does, and I think the fact that so many experienced players have come back maybe highlights that. The one issue for me when you go down that list of players, and it's been a problem for a long time, is who's going to score the goals. And it's such, you know, you can, against these kind of smaller teams, and sort of going back to the Luxembourg game, you're always under pressure if you just can't put them away. And, you know, I'm looking down that list of starters, and I just don't see sort of where too many goals are going to come from. And, the manager can get all the criticism he likes, but you can't magic forwards out of nowhere. And, that's going to be a big issue, unless sort of, you know, looking into the future, if Parrott can kind of live up to the hype, if Connolly can be fit and live up to the reputation that he sort of is beginning to earn in the Premier League, then maybe something can happen. But until that moment, I think every game is going to be a battle. Because there's not enough natural goal scorers in that team or in the squad.
Keeping them out is becoming an issue for Ireland as well, Mark. But looking at the Euros, which won't involve Ireland, Mancini, the Italian manager, is looking for a bigger squad. 23 players won't do him. He wants to bring 26.
He does, yeah, and maybe even more, Ruby. I mean, there's been talk maybe of sort of getting out to 27, 28 players. I mean, this is not actually, though, a case of sort of the bigger nations getting greedy and, you know, not wanting to upset players and just have as big a squad as possible. I think there's some sense behind this. Mancini is saying that, you know, due to the COVID situation and the fact that, you know, Poland are playing England without, that they've had four players ruled out because of COVID, and Ireland have had their own problems and you're going into those Euro playoffs. Mancini's point is that, you know, you could have four or five players just knocked out and not able to play at the drop of a hat, you know, come the summer, and that is not what you want from sort of, you know, I don't think you want it any time, but certainly not in a premier competition like that. You know, imagine going into it having to you know, to not have a fully available squad. It's just, it's not really fair. And so if you could say bring in an extra three or four players, would that do any harm? I don't see anybody that would sort of miss out due to that. It doesn't feel like there are too many negatives behind it. So potentially, this feels like a rare good idea, maybe from somebody in football. And I, for one, sort of would hope that that could get through, and we maybe do get to the Euros with whether it's 26, 27, 28, but certainly more than the 23, because these are not normal times, and so I think you probably do need an extra couple of players.
So speaking of good ideas, that new Champions League format that has been floating around for a while, featuring a 10-match first phase, it was expected to be agreed by UEFA tomorrow, but now that has been delayed. What does that mean, do you think, Mark?
Well, the delay is because some of the clubs, and I mean, you can probably guess which ones, and they've not been named, but it's pretty obvious we're talking about the real biggest ones, are not happy. Despite the fact that they've got everything they wanted from this new competition, they're now saying they want more from the commercial and TV rights than was initially expected. And this is just sort of, you know, the ultimate sort of bullying behaviour, really. It's not, you know, it doesn't matter if this is the school sort of playground or the UEFA headquarters. This is sort of the big boys just pushing the smaller people around, and it's not going to stop unless UEFA say to the big teams, no, you know, go and create your own Super League and see how much you like it, see how many people want to watch it. The big teams will just continue to push and push, and this is what this is about. They want even more money than what was initially thought that they wanted. They want more games, they want more of the TV rights, they just want more, and they're not going to stop until they've got sort of a complete stranglehold on UEFA. At some stage, UEFA will have to say no. I just don't think we've reached that point yet. And where I agreed with Mancini, I can't agree with these kind of European elite heavyweights. You know, they've got enough money, they just don't need any more, but they want it.
As you said, Mark, Mancini's was a rare good idea in soccer. Thanks many for taking our call. And if you think things are going bad for the Irish soccer team, spare a thought for Mongolia. They got beat 14-0 by Japan at the weekend in the World Cup qualifier. We're going to take a break.
On-the-go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, for anybody that missed that Republic of Ireland team, Gavin Bisuno is in goals. Coleman Duffy, O'Shea and Christie looking like a back four with Hendrik Malumbi and Brady across the middle, and then a possible front three of Horgan, Long and McLean. And that game is kicking off at 7:45, and there's live coverage on Radio 1 Extra with commentary from Adrian Eames and Pat Fenlon, and it is also live on RTÉ 2 television.
Looks like a 4-4-3 or 4-3-3, Dunners.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
Yeah, I thought the same. So I agree with you. I agree with you, Dunners. I mean, let's agree with Stephen Kenny. Well, after so many years of dominance from Sir Anthony McCoy in the UK, winning 20 back-to-back jockeys championships, he retired. Richard Johnson took over and won a couple. Then Brian Hughes took over and won one. But this year's championship is turning into a real battle. Brian Hughes, the defending champion, started today at 127 winners. He rode two more to go to 129. But Harry Skelton has been hot in his heels. He started today at 124, had a double in Warwick to get himself to 126. There's only three in it, and he's joining us on the line. Harry, you didn't get any closer today, but Brian didn't get any further away from you either.
No, that's it. Today was a match, so we've been getting closer all the time, but no, today was a match, so we're no further behind, but we're no closer to him either.
No, but look, it's years since I remember Richard Dunwoody and Adrian Maguire going toe-to-toe and an English Jockeys Championship being a real battle. But it does bring excitement to meetings like today, where you were in Warwick, Brian was in Newcastle, and Harry Cobden was 11 behind you, was in Fakenham. This is good for English racing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I suppose the dominance of AP over so many years, people sort of almost expected him to do it. But I suppose this has been the tightest it's been for a long, long time. So I think everyone's getting a kick out of it. And it's certainly a position that I've always dreamt of being in. And I'm really enjoying it.
I know you say it's a position you always dreamt of being in, and I can remember you coming to stay in AP's house when you were a youngster. You started with Paul Nicholls. You rode 14 winners in the 07-08 season, but your career went up and back down. Did you ever think you would get to the position you're in?
Well, I suppose not really at that point. Definitely not. But obviously, since Dan started training, things have thrived for us, and now I'm in a position that 140 horses and plus to ride, and a good team behind me. So now it's possible, you know.
Looking back over the last couple of weeks, obviously Cheltenham wasn't exactly exciting for those of you based in the UK. What was it like being in the English wearing when the Irish were winning so many races?
Yeah, obviously, wasn't great to watch now. I'm a competitive person. I like to be out there. I like to be winning and don't like losing. I think, it was just such a dominance by the Irish. For me, I had some good rides there. A few of the horses ran well, but they didn't win, and it's hard to take that. But just hopefully next year, go back and be more prepared and go again.
We make a really big thing out of the Irish-English thing and beating the English in every sport, really. Does it even come onto your radar, really, that we would be so competitive? Like, does it ever come back? Like, racing seems to be possibly a sport that it is quite even.
Yeah, it is, but I think, obviously, both sides of the sea, it is a major sport, especially over with you guys. And the Irish, you guys love to come over here and take us on, and they have a lot of firepower, so it's ultra competitive. But the English have certainly got to raise their game.
Looking ahead to next week, Harry, you obviously won an Irish National on niche market, but I doubt very much with the battle you're in the UK you'll be in Fairy House. But looking to entry, has Dan kept a few horses? Do you have a good squad going there?
Yeah, we do. We've kept a few back. We have a nice horse, My Drogo. He'll run a 2.5 mile novice. He made his racecourse debut in October in a bumper at Cheltenham, and it's remarkable, really, the progress he's made this year. He's a horse that we really like. He'd be going there with a real strong chance. We have another horse in a 3 mile novice, grade one, Midnight River. He's progressed all year. So we've plenty of chances there. We'll have 4 or 5 a day, so... we have a good team going, and the horses are in good form as well. They're running well, so that's a big plus.
You'll definitely have a ride in the National, but any idea what it's going to be?
Yeah, I think we have Black Lion. He needs 8 to come out. If he gets in, the owner's very keen to run, so we'll take our chance.
I'd say that's a bit of a certainty. And looking to more immediate things, today you were in Warwick. Where are you off to tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'm heading to Southall, seven rides there tomorrow, so some good chances, and I'm loving it, really. I'm getting some good support from outside trainers as well, and I was very lucky to be in the position I'm in, and hopefully tomorrow we'll have some more winners and keep driving forward.
You're on 126 winners, sorry Marie. Looking at it, 4 weeks to go, what number do you think you need to get to win? I know you think like AP, so you've worked this out. Come on.
I think if we can get, well, I think like I'm on 127.
Sorry, I cut you one short. So what do you think you'll win it? 126, I think you're on. It could be 127.
Oh, we're going to ride 106.50. 150, possibly.
150, so you need 23 more. Yeah, that's doable, I'd say.
Yeah, that's doable, definitely.
Do you like the pressure of it?
I do. I do, to be honest. Obviously, maybe if you're not in front, it's a little different. But like, this is where I wanted to get. Like, I wanted to get here. I've got a great team around me. You know, everyone's thriving off it in the yard. But like for me, it's very much obviously in the yard every day, family operation. But the staff are all right behind me. You know, every horse they lead up, they're you know what I mean. They're all getting a kick out of this, and obviously Brian's in the north, and I'm in the south. So the weighing room is, you know, down here, all behind me. So I'm enjoying it. Like I hope to get there, but this is where I want to be. Like, do you know what I mean? I wanted to get here to position where I'm in a chance to win a championship.
We're so casual about it because we're with Ruby all the time and we kind of get used to this overachieving. But it is a really big deal.
Oh, massive. Like, massive. And, like, to be honest, years ago, I think I rode 187 winners. That's my best season. And it just happened to be that year, Rich Johnson rode 210. And then just for, a business point of view from my brother, we had to cut the numbers a little bit. Filter out the lesser horses and concentrate a bit more on the quality. So we hadn't really set out this year to have a crack at it, but it came out of Ascot a few weeks ago. I had three winners and suddenly you're only 12 behind, and that's the first time we really thought we might have a chance here. So since then, thankfully the horse has kept in good form, but yeah, it's a massive thing, and you know, this, like I say, this is where I wanted to be. So hopefully now we can keep pushing and get across the line.
There'll be some excitement if it goes all the way to the last day and you're up lying on Noob Negra in the Grade 1 in Sandown. There was a fraction unlucky in the champion chase. That'd be a sweet way to win it.
It would be, but I hope it's over before then.
No way. It has to go all the way there, Harry, to make it exciting. We want to see you in helicopters like the Woody and Maguire were years ago, doing double meetings, flat to the mat all the way. Keep us entertained. Harry, thanks a million for taking our call. I wish you all the best, and we will catch up soon, I'm sure.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a million. Ruby, it is exciting though, isn't it? And like, I can't imagine the pressure of being in that position.
Oh, it is, Marie, and it was something that was dominated for so long by AP. But I remember Harry as a youngster coming to stay with AP. I mean, AP was his idol, and he's worked hard himself. And Dan, obviously their dad Nick is a world famous Olympian show jumper. But it would be some achievement for them and for Brian Hughes in the north of England. Much different. England is always like two countries when it comes to racing. You have the north and the south, and they're at the complete opposites of it. It'll go all the way. It'll bring excitement even to the Scottish National Meeting in Ayr, where Brian will expect it to be more dominant with so many northern horses over Harry coming from the south, and it'll add a good bit of spice to it.
Just on that, Ruby, like, we love a rivalry, but the relationship there, even them chatting about the weigh room has been different when they're coming in, you know what I mean? You can imagine that it gives everyone a lift when Harry gets a win, or when Brian then, is he going into the weigh room going, how did Brian get on?
Yeah, of course he is, and they're telling him when he's coming back in. But and there won't be much when he goes to Ayr, to Scottish National. That's when Harry will see the difference with the north south, because there won't be that many southern riders up there, and it'll be interesting to see how well received he is when he gets up there by then.
So what's the state of play then here at home, Ruby?
Instead of play at home here is Rachel Blackmore is 7, I think, or 8, behind Paul Townend. She's on 85, Paul is on 92, and it goes on a week longer in Ireland. But for Rachel to outscore Paul in the next 4 weeks by 2 a week is going to be hard. If she could ride another 16 winners, it'd be a good return for her. That would put her on to over 100. But if she rides 16, it means Paul only has to ride 9. It's just going to be harder for her.
Just, Ruby, how high do you hold it up, champion jockey? Like, it must be a big deal. It's
a huge deal. I mean, it's what anybody wants to be called a champion in whatever they do. Like, I was lucky enough to be champion here a good few occasions, and of course it is nice to be called champion jockey and be told you're champion jockey. Pardon?
How many?
12.
What was the highest you ever got to?
Highest I got to in Ireland was 131. And when I added it to what I'd ridden in England, I wrote 200 winners twice between Ireland and England in two different years. But 131 was the most I rode in Ireland, I think. So it was.
Right, well, some bad news for Ireland. Serbia have gone ahead against Azerbaijan. 85.
I thought you were going to say Qatar were gone in front. I was thinking, what?
Another while to go. We'll take a very quick break and then we'll be back with golf.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, and it's time for our regular chat this week with Gary Murphy. Gary, how are you?
I'm very well, Ruben, yourself?
Oh, great, thank God, great, thank God. Gary, the Walker Cup team is even announced today, and John Murphy and Mark Power have both been included in the 10-man team.
Great news for for the two of them. I'm obviously delighted for Mark Power because he's a Kilkenny man like myself. And the fact they've been playing in the States on the collegiate circuit is why they've gotten in. They've both done well. I think it's disappointing for Keelan Rafferty, but just with COVID, he hasn't been playing any golf. He was on the last team in Hoylake. It's very disappointing for him, but probably outside his control, really. But for Mark and John, it's fantastic. John was on the Eisenhower team in Carton House a few years back, which was the first kind of top three Irish amateurs. It's the first cap for both, but obviously Mark Power is newer to this level, but he's doing really well at Wake Forest, as John is doing in Louisville. So it's brilliant to have two Irish on the team. There's a big English presence. They have seven, one Scottish lad, so they'll be up against it. The American team is, as it is every time on paper, very strong, but it's great for the guys, and I think John is probably a bit closer to the professional ranks after this. Hopefully Mark's hopefully they both stay on and graduate university. That's the number one goal for them. But it's a great announcement for Irish golf.
Gary, we usually just focus on the big day, the elites, the professionals. But just in general, how are we doing at that amateur level? Are we bringing golfers through? Are there going to be, is there going to be a conveyor belt of next generation stars?
Well, back in 2015, we had five Irish on the Walker Cup team, which was the biggest representation ever. Of those five, they haven't really soldiered on. Obviously, Paul Dunn did get out on tour and won a huge event with the British Masters, beating Rory. He's since struggled badly for form, and then he got injured, so he's trying to fight his way back. Cormac Sharvin is on tour, and Gavin Moynan is on Challenge Tour, and Gary Hurley is trying to find his way through the mini tours and still sticking at it, which is great to see. Jack Hume doesn't play anymore, believe it or not, but there's always, you know, there's no guarantee just because you back Walker Cup that you're going to go on and have a successful professional career, but it is a yardstick. It's the pinnacle of amateur golf, and it's the best, the highest rank that they can get, so it's very exciting for the lads, you know, and it's a milestone in their career. I think they're going to play in Seminole in Florida, so they'll be up against it massively, but it'll be a great experience for them.
Gary, I know the last 18-12 months has been hard for everybody, but I was reading about Caelan Rafferty yesterday in the Irish Independent, and he's been working as the greenkeeper in Dundalk Golf Club, mowing grass, yeah. Not playing golf. The last 12 months for people at that stage of development must have been incredibly hard.
Oh, it's brutal, it really is. It's kind of okay for the amateurs as such because they're still in college or working or whatever, but for the young guys who have turned pro and are on mini tours and trying to get on the Challenge Tour and don't even know, you know, if there is going to be a Challenge Tour this year. I know there's some sort of a schedule there, but there's a great announcement today that there is going to be a European Tour School at the end of the year, and the big thing that gives young kids trying to, you know, realise their dreams or find their ways, it gives them a bit of hope, and they haven't really had that for 18 months, so I was delighted with that announcement. The Euro Pro Tour will start next month in the UK, and there'll be a good few Irish on that, but it's just a really tough time. Obviously there's no income, I'm sure most of them are on the pup just trying to keep afloat, but it's a very difficult space, because when you're trying to find your way in the early part of your career, you know, you don't have a lot of time. There's kind of a 3 to 5 year window for a lot of these kids to make it before they run out of money, and then reality bites, and it's a tough place. And, you know, you see it with Conor O'Rourke, who's our touring pro at the K Club. I mean, he's working extremely hard, but they haven't really had a schedule to look forward to. You know, they're trying to prepare and do all the right things and that, but it's very difficult if you don't really have a schedule or a plan. So great announcement for tour school, because it does give guys something to practice for and work for, but it's just trying to get tournaments. You know, you can see with the European Tour, they're kind of chasing their tail at the moment, trying to stay ahead of COVID in certain countries, and it's just not easy. The Portuguese Master got cancelled a couple of weeks ago, and it's a big worry, really. And then you have the added factor of companies that are struggling with this crisis, and can they afford to sponsor golf tournaments? So it's a very difficult space for these guys.
Gary, there's the announcement as well a little bit earlier that golf is going to come back at the end of April. So just for you guys down in the K Club, what does that mean?
I think it's dreadful. I really do. I mean, it's I can't understand it. I mean, golf is such a safe thing to do outdoors. My main hope is that, okay, it's another month, which is as bad as you could have wished for, really. But it's got to go back to being allowed to play four balls or play as you wish. If they're going to have restrictions on this on the 26th and it's two balls and all of that sort of stuff, I just think it's crazy. I think golf is such, you know, there's so many people out walking around in parks and beaches and wherever else, and golf is a very safe sport to do outdoors. I understand it's there's a pandemic going on, but you know, the golf isn't irrelevant. It's just to get out and meet people and socially interact and walk around for 4 or 5 hours in the fresh air and play, and how that can be unsafe and we have to wait another month, I just think is absolutely absurd.
The reality is most amateur golfers don't ever get anywhere near each other on a golf course anyway. Usually all over the place.
It's, you know, it's tough on clubs as well, because you've got people that have paid subs and the, you know, they're going to be closed down for 4 months, and clubs are under pressure trying to stay afloat, and they've, you know, they're asking a lot of memberships you know, to kind of get back and just continue on, but you know, it's an unbelievably difficult space for everyone. The only good thing is that greenkeepers don't like golfers on the golf courses, and we'll find out who the good ones are now when we get back, because there's no excuse for golf courses not to be absolutely pristine. It's a long way away. It's another month. It's very difficult. It is. You know, there's huge mental health issues. I don't think they're taking that into account. I think the transmission rates, they've never given any facts to what the transmission rates are with golf clubs or golf courses. So it doesn't make any sense. I think the reality of it is what happened back in Galway last August is wreaking havoc with people that just like to play golf, and that's totally unfair. I think it's wrong. I can't understand it. I'm absolutely flummoxed as to why we have to wait another month when we're now kind of into middle spring. We all know outdoor is safer. The temperatures are getting warmer. The particles don't travel as much outdoor, and it just doesn't make any sense at all. I think golfers are getting a bad rap for this, really.
Gary, there'll be very little patience for slow play as well. We saw Colin Montgomery over the weekend hitting out at Horschel and Scheffler for their slow play at the WGC.
I think it's a long week to match play. They start Wednesday. You know, they by the time they get to Sunday, they're nearly running out of gas at that stage. It's 36 holes a day. Conditions are really tough on Sunday. Now, there's no denying that the pace of play was poor, but they played an easy golf course for pretty much 4 days, and then the wind got up on Sunday, and then they have a lot at stake. But the pace of play was poor. It hasn't really been something that's been highlighted in recent times. I know DeChambeau about a year and a half ago had major problems with it, and he sorted it out. But it was a hard watch, and I think it's a tough format as well, because when you have, with no disrespect to Horschel or Scheffler, you had the two best players that week in the final. But, you know, from the point of view of sponsorship, you want the marquee players there. They weren't there. It was a very hard watch for 4.5-5 hours, whatever it was. But I think the weather was more of a factor, really, and a bit of tiredness and the pressure of trying to win the WGC. They just slowed down, and that's what happens, I guess.
Do you think, Gary, the fact there was only one match on also highlighted it. I mean, if it was a normal golf tournament and there was, you could skip from one hole to another and incorporate the whole thing, would it have been as noticeable?
It probably wouldn't have. You know, they'd know where to go, as you say. There was only one game, and it's a tough gig doing that in commentary when you're sitting just talking about two lads for 4.5 hours and trying not to repeat yourself. But I think that was a major fact that highlighted the issues. But I think the weather played a huge factor as well, because they were used to just feeling that birdies had to win holes, and then with the conditions, pars were winning holes, and it was a totally different dynamic. But it's a format they have to look at, really. I don't think it's working as it is. You want the stars hanging around there at the weekend, and the way it's at, and the gap is so fine between our number 64 in the world, number one, over 18 holes, you're always going to have upsets. And when you have two guys like that in the final, you know, it doesn't really whet the appetite, unfortunately. But that's just the way it is, I guess.
It sure is. Billy Horschel got himself a nice check all the same for strolling around his own time. But Masters champion Dustin Johnson withdrew from this week's Valero Texas Open after making a late entry. Why would you make a late entry and then withdraw yourself?
I guess he probably thought on Friday he was maybe a little undercooked for Augusta and wanted another week's prep, and probably had a chat with his coach and whoever, and decided that they can go home and work on whatever things they need to work on, because it's going to be quite windy this week in Texas. Would that be a really good prep for Augusta? Different grass and all that goes with that. And I think maybe that's why Johnson decided to change his mind and just practice at home and get ready that way. Possibly outside the glare of the media as well, and he can do what he needs to get done. But it's disappointing for the tournament. They didn't have him, then they had him, and then he's gone again. So it's a tough one for the tournament. But Johnson's just thinking about Augusta, and he has to do what he feels what is right for himself in his game.
At the weekend as well, we're going to have the ANA Inspiration, and it is the 50th anniversary. I was reading about it today, and just really brilliant background piece on the BBC, just all about how it has formed and developed, and so worth checking out just to get a bit of history from it. But all eyes over here will definitely be on Leona Maguire, Gary.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's the first time in living memory that we've had an opportunity for an Irish player to go in and win one of these things. It's a huge ask for her to win it. But she finished 18th last year, improved as the week went on. There's only three shots out of the top 10. It's very exciting for Leona. She's having a really good season. I think she's found her feet now. And there's, to be honest, there's no pressure on her going into this. All the pressure is at the top end with the stars. She can go in and just, you know, play her game, get her head down and see where it takes her. Stephanie Meadow finished third in the US Open 2014, which is our best ever finish. But that was, you know, a bit of a shock, whereas this week, you know, Stephanie is obviously playing as well. It's her fifth appearance, so she knows how to get around there too. But I think Leona would be the favourite of the two Irish. And it's really exciting. We can't go out and play golf. There's plenty of golf to watch this weekend, and I keep saying it, you know, to the weekend warrior, you learn a lot more watching how these women play the game. They're phenomenal athletes. Their technique is far superior to the men. It's played at a speed that's more relevant to a weekend golfer. It's not the, you know, the 200 miles an hour of Bryson DeChambeau. And I think it's going to be fascinating watch for the weekend. And I'm really looking forward to it.
So you're thinking the ladies can transform us all back to being able to play golf rather than just trying to mimic what Bryson DeChambeau is doing and making fools of ourselves?
Oh, 100%. Like, they play way more within themselves. They have obviously limitations speed-wise, so they don't try to counter that. They just, their accuracy, if you go through the stats, tee to green stats, accuracy wise, in the men's game and the women's game, there's no comparison. The women are way more accurate than the men, and they control their ball, whereas the weekend warrior is always trying to hit the perfect shot as far as he can hit it. And there'll be a lot to be learned this week. It's going to be fascinating, because I think there's so much class at the top end. There's so much drama because it's the first major of the year. Everyone wants to stake a claim, and it's a course that everyone knows, because it's a bit like Augusta next week. It's back to the same venue every year. and that adds his own drama because they know where, you know, all the good spots are and they know where the bad spots are. So I think it's going to be brilliant. I just hope Leona can get off to a good start. She got off to a slow start when it was played here in September. It was delayed, obviously, because of COVID. But she rolled back with 68-69 at the weekend. And if she can get off to a fast start and just try, if she can, enjoy the week, anything is possible.
So, Gary, give us a tip for the for that and for the Texas Open.
Texas, I'm going to go for two Koreans, actually. I'm going to go for world number one, Jin Young Ko, who is just an amazing player. She won it in 2019, couldn't defend it last year because of COVID. And I'm going to go for Siwoo Kim in Texas.
Gary Murphy, thanks a million. I think that's about all we have time for, folks. We're getting close to the end. Dunica, who's up next?
Yeah, Tara Stewart's up next. A massive thank you to John Farrell and Laura Lee Davis. We're back tomorrow at 6.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey, and beef. Natural protein, your way.